The voice of Husker Nation is on the air. This is Hail Varsity Radio. Insight, opinion, expertise, along with the biggest names talking Nebraska sports. Join in with the show at 402-489-1240 or 1-800-825-5865. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and Elijah Herbel.
Welcome to it. Thursdays here at Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, Connor Clark wearing his Chicago Cubs glory. Hope you're doing all right. It is opening day. Can argue the point of it being a national holiday. Hope you've caught a beer, a dog, or a burger, and some MLB today. Numbers to get in, 489-1240, 800-825-5865. Can email Chris at HailVarsity.com, and we'll get to your comments in the stream. Want to be a part of the show? Easy to do. Just log on to the Hail Varsity YouTube channel, like and subscribe there. You can also find us on Twitter, the Hail Varsity Twitter handle, at HVarsity Radio. Different platforms to catch us as well. AM 590 Omaha's ESPN, the Twitter handle there, and Facebook and Twitter with KFOR, Central Nebraska, ESPN Superstation, and, of course, News Talk 900 out of Columbus. How we doing? How we feeling? Sweet 16, half of that bracket tonight. Spring football thoughts from Matt Rhule, Thomas Fedotti. We'll catch up with them. Brandon Vogel in 15 minutes from Counter Reed. In hour two, since he's back from vacation, Mitch Sherman going to be with us from The Athletic. Also, Gary Barnett. A lot of questions about Prime, questions about the Irish. And what do you do with facilities v. NIL? We'll get Coach Barnett's take on that in hour two. Daddy Burke from Burke's Best Bet. We'll get Daddy's take on the remaining Sweet 16. Also, some MLB futures bets. So, are you geared up? Are you ready for baseball? I know you are, Elijah. You ready to do some umping? You ready to get to the show?
I have some little kid baseball this weekend. That's going to be interesting.
Are you playing or umpiring?
Oh, wow.
They got me in the DH spot. I have not done baseball below the age of the 14U bracket in about 5 years. So if you see me out in the baseball diamond this weekend, I apologize if I don't know the run rule or the time limit rule or any of the little kid baseball rules. But I can tell you, it's going to be a tight zone all weekend long. A lot of walks is what I'm looking for.
Did you see the score last night with Gretna East?
Yes, I did. Mitch and I had a mini discussion.
Who'd they play?
Westview?
Yes.
Westview.
40-1.
Oh my God, what?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It happens.
Why? Why is it even like allowed?
Because the run rule doesn't kick in until 5 innings have been completed.
They scored 40 runs in 5 innings.
But they went station to station. This was not a-hole coach, let's run it up. This was station to station baseball after it started out 17-0.
Oh. That's brutal.
It should be noted, and Mitch and I had this discussion on Twitter.
We'll get
last
Mitch's
night.
Take on it. He put a good thought out on Twitter.
Both coaches at any time can mutually agree to end the game anytime they want. Neither coach wanted to do that in this case. I want to let you know, as bad as that sounds, there are positives that can come from a game like
that.
You
still play.
You still play. First, a team like Gretna East can clear its bench a little bit and play some guys that maybe don't play all that much. They get some experience. They get some chance at some live at-bats. It's good for them. As for Westview, obviously, they have some improving they need to do. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone within the program. It gets you a chance to get some live ABs against some good competition, especially as you clear the bench. It usually turns into a more competitive baseball game. You get a chance to get some experience. It's still pretty early in the season. You get a chance to get better. I just want to note, there's a reason that coaches tend to not end these games early. That's usually a pretty good reason. As bad as that score looks,
you're still getting a live ball hit to you, and it's not practice.
Yes, yeah. And the coaches could have chosen to end that game anytime. They didn't. So.
If you're on the one side of the ledger here, you're getting beat 40-1. Would you just start throwing at people?
Well, I had a district game.
Cotter's smiling.
That could get out of line so fast.
I had a district game a couple years ago.
I kid.
Where it got out of hand pretty early on. There was a team, I'm not going to name any names, but there was a team that had not played much organized baseball prior to this year. They were the 4 seed coming into the district. Most of the guys that were on that team, this was their first time ever playing competitive baseball, was that spring. So it got out of hand pretty quickly. The other teams started taking at-bats from the opposite side of the plate. The righties were batting lefty. The lefties were batting righty. They were still getting base hits. My point being, there is sometimes a large skill gap here. The important thing is, are the players still having fun? And if the players are not having fun, I think at the if there's an embarrassment factor that's going on, which there naturally is, but there's also teams that know they're not very good. So as long as the players are still able to enjoy it and they aren't completely embarrassed in the dugout, I think it's important to keep these games going. Players want to play baseball. You're on the team to play. You're on the team not to forfeit after 30 minutes because you're down by 20 runs. So I just want to note that there's been a lot of discussion around. I want to make sure everybody knows the coaches can end the game at any time should they so choose, and they didn't choose to do that last night. As bad as that score looks.
Did you send the fat kid at first to steal second? How many times? So it is. Wait.
While we're talking baseball here, congratulations are in order to Connor Clark.
Yes, he is off to be the voice of the Lincoln Salt Dogs.
Thanks, guys.
Bravo. Congrats.
How many hours will you spend on a bus this summer?
I don't want to think about that. And probably too large of a number.
Think of all the Netflix you can get knocked out.
Actually, you find that your favorite relief pitcher. I did a Dolman let me do a week and a half on the road. Him and John Baylor did for the Dogs.
Oh. I didn't know this.
Yeah, it was great. Oh. I cozied up to one of the relief pitchers who always had a cooler.
Naturally.
And it worked out.
Yeah, Dolman might be making his return to the Salt Dog booth on May 18th.
Okay.
We have a game the day of graduation. So my family will not let me miss graduation, nor will myself. Kind of looking for a replacement.
Hey,
there,
but, dude. You know. What are you doing?
Let's get Chris Schmidt in the booth for the Lincoln Salt Dogs.
You guys just
a bit outside the bottle of Jack Daniels like I'm Harry Doyle. Okay, we'll get our shout-outs in a moment, but it is opening day, so two questions. You can chime in on the stream or chime in across the Hail Varsity Radio Network, 489-1240 or 800-825-5865. Would you and could you complete the Wade Boggs Challenge, 32 Coors Lights on a cross-country flight. Could you handle that? Not 6 chicken breasts or chicken before every ball game. That was the other superstition from Wade Boggs, Omaha's finest and the pride of Omaha, although he didn't grow up in Omaha. 2, who's the player you would go watch on opening day, current or past? If you get in the old DeLorean and go back and see anybody on opening day, who would it be? Or you have a chance to go check out somebody on opening day. Yanks are playing the Astros today. You've got the Twins and the Royals. You go down the list. I mean, there's a lot of teams that are in action today, and it's great. And then you have 161 more of them. You know, I might go check out Strawberry and Gooden and those 86 Mets, dating myself just because I was such a incredibly talented but crazy clubhouse collection. The Big Red Machine in the 70s was really cool. I loved the 90s Athletics with McGuire, Canseco, Dave Stewart, Ricky Henderson. So those were some squads. There's a lot of Royals fans in the area, a lot of Cubs fans. I mean, the 98 Cubs team's got a special place in my heart, for sure. The 03 team as well that made me divorce the Cubs. How many opening games days have you been to? Did you pull that off? Dad, take me to opening day. Really?
I've been close. I've been to a couple games in, like, early April.
Okay.
But I've never been to an opening day game, and I kind of wish
you and Cameron and Ferris Bueller didn't sneak out and go.
Unfortunately, I didn't make the trip, so. Okay. Well, I got excused to go to a 120 Friday game, so I mean,
nice.
Parents' approval makes you
the old matinee. Yeah. A Moranic figure says 2 days in a row working on 3. That's called a winning streak. Thank you, Moranic figures. Lou Brown, the great late manager for the Cleveland, not that nicknamed anymore. And you, Grandpa, checks in. Jeff says, "What's up?" NASCAR Eric says, "How's it going?" Jeff Snitley, 4th, says, "Go Cubs." Happy opening day to everyone that celebrates. Tuck says, "What's up? Let's do this." Black Hills Brennan says what's up. Afternoon, cornheads. Brandon says hello. Eat beef. Hola. Ty checks in. As I just screwed that up, let me go back to the comments. And where did we leave off? Tuck. Is there, my computer's being a son of a bee, moving forward, Elijah, the other one, hidey-ho, three-putt Mitch says hello, Tiger Shark Diver as well, and we'll say hi to Brian and Patrick as well. Okay, spring football.
I've been thinking, I'm trying to think of the baseball team I'd go back and watch. I'm more of a historic guy. Mm-hmm. I want to see some of the history of baseball. If I was going to go back and watch any opening day roster, I think back to some of those 1920s and 30s Yankees teams, the original Bronx Bombers.
Murderer's Row.
Yeah, like you got to look there. You got to look at Gehrig and Ruth. Mm-hmm. And I know there wasn't crossover between those guys.
I think you would just want to go party in the Roaring Twenties.
A little bit of that, too. But then I also look back to those Cardinals teams with Bob Gibson, Omaha legend.
Nice.
I'd love to see him on the bump because his dominance is one of those things that doesn't translate well in terms of, you can't go back and watch full games from Bob Gibson, really. You can't go back and see the type of stuff that you get to see in person. I go back to some of those historical teams. TV's changed a lot of stuff with baseball, that you can watch a team on TV and it kind of feels the same. You can't do that with those teams from 1910 through 1970 or so. So I'd probably pick a team in that era, but those are the ones that come to mind. Either a guy like Bob Gibson, a dominant pitcher, or maybe you go back to the Bronx Bombers. Maybe like the Ted Williams Red Sox teams.
That'd be cool. Yeah, they'd be fun. Walter from Philly says Michael Jack Schmidt. Philly'd be some of those Phillies teams. Fernando Mania for NU Grandpa. How about you, Connor?
I have a biased answer and an unbiased answer. My biased answer is going to be that 03 Cubs team because I wasn't, you know, old enough, obviously, to understand any of that. I was a year old. Mm-hmm. But I would love to be there to kind of see the hype surrounding that team. I guess we got a taste of it in 2016, mm-hmm. but, like, just everybody knowing that, okay, this team's going to be good. The curse could end this year, yada, yada, yada. Another player individual I would love to see, because I just want to experience, like, the swagger that he played with in person, is Ken Griffey Jr.
Dude,
I would love
seeing
to see
him
that in person.
Seeing him with the Mariners was incredible. Even seeing him that first year with Cincinnati, mm-hmm. that's the last Cubs games I got to. It was late 90s. Dude hit a grand slam in the late innings to pull off a massive Reds comeback. And it was late May, so it was warm. Your snot wasn't freezing to your upper lip in Wrigley. And seeing him in Cincy to go pay tribute to his dad, who mm-hmm. played on those big red machines, was cool. Anonymous weighs in on the Wade Boggs Challenge. 32 beers on one flight would equate to 11 pairs of 11 pairs of Depends.
Yeah, no, there's no way anyone's doing the Wade Boggs Challenge.
That's insane.
I didn't counter sleepiness after about six beers. I know 3 beers an hour is reasonable. It's doable. It's not too crazy of a pace. But I know after I finish off the first six pack, now I'm getting sleepy. So
you have Jackson says, give me Nolan Ryan.
Ooh, I have one more I just thought of.
Patrick says Jackie Robinson.
One more I just thought of. I could go back to the mid-1960s where the Giants had a starting pitcher by the name of Ron Herbel. Yes, we are related.
Really?
Yeah, I have his baseball card at home. He is, I believe, if I remember correctly, I'm not the genealogy guy in the family. I believe he's the second cousin of my grandfather.
Wow.
So that's cool. He had a middling career. I think it was 8 seasons in the majors.
Nice.
He's been across a couple teams, but longest stint was with the Giants. I go back and catch a game with him and see if he'd ever believe, hey, I'm your, what would that be, third cousin twice removed?
Something like that.
Something like that.
How about we hit on spring football? We'll take more of your suggestions here in honor of opening day. Also, ballpark food. There are some monstrosities out there. A Mitch Witch. We will get Mitch Sherman's take in an hour, a little less than
the
campfire milkshake.
It's beautiful.
It's the only reason to go see the White Sox.
I know, but it's beautiful.
It looks great.
This is coming from a Cubs fan.
No, completely.
I'm sure it costs you $20, though.
Current or former player you'd love to see opening day. We'll take more of your comments and phone calls in the stream. How about Matt Rhule? We'll hear from him a little bit after 4:40. But I love the fact that there are 3 teams going on. You've got the Rattlesnake Boys or something like that, the Bug Eaters, and then the Old Gold Knights, 3 former names for the University of Nebraska football team. I like that. He is looking at 2 things when we see this. It's development, and it's live development with these scrimmages. going on. And how are you going to get the best out of your guys? You can do individual work. Yeah, you can do teamwork, sure. But how are you going to get better at playing football? And rules kind of assess this group, at least in this spring, with the mix of old and young. And he's like, these guys are going to get better at playing against one another. It's bragging rights, the level, the intensity, to me, reading into this, amps up when you're actually going out there and it's for real versus hammering a blocking sled or doing some light walkthroughs. So I think that's a nice read on this football team. The other part, too, this is as close as you're going to get to do-or-die moments when you're working on third and short or third and long. How do you get better at it, and how do you gain some confidence by doing, right? I think this is going to be useful for Nebraska this spring, these moments, when it gets into fourth quarter time, right? Chasing three and finding a way to survive and thrive in those gut check situations. So I found that really interesting that there's three separate teams and they're teeing off on one another. Brandon Vogel checks in from Counter Reed. Hail Varsity continues. We're powered by Cornhead Lager.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back into it, it's Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbert, we welcome in Brandon Vogel from Counter Reed, counterreed.com. As Vogues, if you could pick anywhere to spend opening day, what ballpark are you drafting?
Whoa, I don't... I was at Fenway a couple of times for opening day, so I feel like I've got that one fairly checked, and I think beyond that, the only option is Wrigley Field. So nothing. I mean, I think if you polled people, that probably would take one of those two parks would take about 90% of the vote, but that's for a reason. I think that's where you want to be.
The Cubby Bear or having a toddy. What's the Red Sox bar, or what are the options? You know, there's Cubby Bear, there's Murphy's. I'm missing a couple probably. Those are the two that I got to wander into with the fam, but not for opening day. But what's the establishment of choice around Fenway?
I'm assuming it's still there. I haven't been back to Boston in a couple of years. And so much has changed around Fenway Park that it's possible it's not. But the institution was kind of called the Cask and Flagon, which is right behind the Green Monster, like literally across the street. Mark McGwire probably homered on top of it during the 99 All-Star game. So that was kind of the place. Like anytime if you watched a Red Sox game, playoff game, that's kind of where the TV cameras would cut to when they wanted a side of what life in Boston was like. So I think, assuming it's still there for yet another season, that's the first one that jumps to mind for sure.
Well, enjoy opening day, tip a pint, and the national pastime is off and running.
I will say some of us here are kind of Rockies fans who cannot enjoy opening day for that reason. So,
well, you have dispensaries and plenty of low dough options to go have a pint. I'll say the area around Coors is pretty awesome. Coors would be my top five, but yeah, it would be Wrigley. It would be, I've never been to Fenway. I think Candlestick, and I know that's 30 years and different naming rights companies ago, but I think San Francisco would be cool just because Grandpa Schmidt was a big Willie Mays guy. Yankee Stadium would be all right. And it wasn't quite opening day, but it was the first month of the season I got to see old Tiger Stadium. And the secondhand smoke is still upon me. It was great from the dive bars around old Tiger Stadium. Let's talk body blows. Not shouting.
Speaking of Detroit.
speaking of Hitman Hearn's territory. Let's talk Matt Rhule. Really good column from you with CounterRead, CounterRead.com. And it's in reference to Troy Dannon's compliment of just how physical Temple was in the Rhule era. And we heard from Matt Rhule today. We heard from Thomas Fedoni. Competition's the name of the game here in spring. And I like the fact there's three rotating teams with throwback names. That's all good. But you know what? A lot of video coverage focused on one Dylan Raiola today.
Yeah, I don't think that's gonna slow down anytime soon between now and the spring game. So no, it's good to get back in the swing of things, have that first practice availability, and kind of let you know. Not that it ever falls too far from mind, but you know, you go a while without these practice availabilities, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember. Like this is what this is. So. Body blows. Yeah. New AD Troy Dannon was asked on Wednesday about his kind of overlap in the AAC when he was at Tulane, and Rhule was in his last 2 years at Temple, winning double digit games both of those years. And, you know, he mentioned teams didn't win the week after playing Temple because it was a physical brand of football. And, well, there's two things that jumped out for me on that. Give me something I can measure and I will measure it. I don't know if that's a good trait or a bad trait. And also, like, it was interesting to hear it applied to Rhule because we heard about kind of the body blow effect of facing option teams for a long time. Nebraska was one of those teams. You heard it most often now with Service Academy. It's like, oh, this is interesting. did teams have a tougher go of it the week after facing a Temple? Looked into it. They fared slightly worse than they did in all other games. Like, I think the winning percentage after facing Rhule, this is for his entire career, including Baylor and his year at Nebraska. It's about 45% winning percentage versus 49% in all other games. So a little bit of truth to that statement. That said, I think it was close enough for me to say, I don't know if there's real evidence of body blow effect here, but I think the overall takeaway for me is, like, it made sense with Rhule. Like, if you had said that about, you know, how Mummy air raid at Kentucky, like, you'd be like, oh, I don't know if that adds up. So I think Dannon's, it was a great soundbite. It's the sort of thing you say at a press conference about your new head coach. And it's not wrong. It's just that I didn't quite see the drastic evidence I was hoping to see.
It's Brandon Vogel with us here on Hail Varsity Radio talking spring practice and the body blows that Nebraska hopes to have on the field here. That's Matt Rhule's way. It's his way at Temple. It was his way at Baylor. And Vogel, it's funny that the topic we're talking about today is bunny blow or body blows. Not funny, haha, but funny, interesting, because what we saw from the open media portion of today's practice was the opposite of body blows. It was quarterbacks throwing to receivers on air. There was no defense out there. Doesn't strike you as body blows. So I'm going to dive into kind of the coach's mind when it comes to media. Do you think the media is really going to get a chance to see anything this spring, anything of substance, I should say, in terms of what Nebraska's identity might be next year, what Nebraska might hope to accomplish next season?
Probably not. Probably as little as possible. That said, I do think Rhule, like, thinks about these availabilities, and not just of like, okay, well, let's put a bunch of nothing up there so nobody sees anything. Like, he hasn't struck me as the kind of coach who is like that. Like, I think he wants it to be somewhat informative and to help people's coverage, which should be the purpose of those availabilities. That said, this early in spring, you know, you're still kind of ramping up. I suspect next open practice availability, you might get a little bit more of a live look. That said, Rhule did note, you know, a lot of their competition stuff was towards the end. So they did hold some of that back, or if that's just their regular schedule, it's just their regular schedule. So now it feels a little bit like spring training, for lack of a better term, for everybody involved. Let's like get this first open practice under all of our belts, and a couple weeks from now, it'll be a little bit more informative, I think.
Brandon Vogel with us, few minutes here, Hail Varsity Radio, CounterRead, CounterRead.com, where you can find and read Brandon Vogel, Aaron Sorensen. So let's talk tight ends, as you have some young pups. You've got some gray beards in that room. Good to hear from Thomas Fedoni. He's feeling good, and he's a guy that I think can be big, and is super talented. He's feeling physically at a high level. He said that today. How about the sat effect with that tight end room? You've got your offensive coordinator that is able to walk around now because you've got your dedicated quarterbacks coach. But do you expect to see an uptick in tight end usage, not only because Sat's front and center in that room, but just, hey, if you've got these options at tight end, why not use that mismatch? Coaches, if you've got a couple, they love going to them. You know what kind of an issue against a defense the tight end can be.
Yeah, having one of those guys is a huge deal. Having two of them, you know, that are as versatile as Fidoti, I think, is, and as presumably Carter Nelson will be, then you really start, I think, amping up the degree of difficulty for opposing defenses pretty quickly. And having Satterfield kind of devoted to that as his position group is a factor. Having a quarterback's coach that is familiar. I mean, we've seen this exact setup in terms of the breakdown of their duties in the past with on rule staffs. That impacts this. And just getting better quarterback play, which, you know, I'm not ready to say for sure that Nebraska will or who will provide it, but it was kind of at such a basic level last year through circumstances we're all well aware of at this point that I almost think it can't help but be better. So, yes, I do think tight end, particularly led by Fidoni, you know, earlier this week, I kind of revisited the discussion about who's Nebraska's guy. He's still the first one that pops to mind for me on offense. Based on what we've seen, but also based on what we haven't seen yet, which I think it might be the key piece with him.
Something's been on my mind, Vogel. I want to get your thoughts on it with the news of the week. I've been thinking about Nebraska. I don't want to call it a log jam in the tight end room, but they have plenty of options. They're very deep at the tight end position. Matt Rhule's made that an emphasis in the first two recruiting classes. Do you think that's deeper than the tight end's role in the offense? I look at what's happening in the NFL with their change to the kickoff rules. With that five-yard scrum you're going to get, the tight end's going to be very, very valuable. A guy that's both athletic, able to block, able to be stronger than some smaller guys who are out there for speed. It feels like that new kickoff is really, really well suited for tight ends to succeed both on kick coverage and on kick return. Do you think Matt Rhule had some foresight in stocking up the tight end room, understanding that change might be coming to college football soon?
I'd be surprised if he was anticipating that change, though I agree with you. I think now that the NFL's made the switch, it won't be, well, who knows, college football. But my thought is it won't be long before we see something similar. I think the kind of depth at tight end, them starting some guys out there in terms of younger players is more a reflection of just kind of what they want. They want football players. And, you know, if you've got a guy who's kind of that classic tight end size, start him there. Because if it turns out that they can block, then they'll probably stay there. If they're not that good at, you know, on the line or in the interior, and maybe you get bumped out to wide receiver. But, you know, bringing in guys who kind of look maybe a little light coming out of high school but are extremely athletic allows you to do that. So tight end is kind of your – in terms of offensive positions, it's kind of your biggest wild card because a guy can go a lot of ways from there if he's capable of playing tight end.
Couple more minutes with Brandon Vogel at Hale Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager. We'll get more from Vogues on the other side. We'll hear from Matt Rhule and post-practice today here in about 10 minutes or so. Hour two, busy. We'll run down Mitch Sherman from The Athletic, Gary Barnett, Danny Burke in hour two. I want to remind you about buckling up, hands on the wheel, eyes and focus straight ahead. The driver has one job. That's to drive. This message from the NDOT Highway Safety Office. Some monstrosities to talk about as well when it comes to your ballpark food list. That's coming up with Hale Varsity.
And now, back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Brandon Vogel with us a few minutes here. Hale Varsity Radio, counterread.com, where you can find and read Brandon Vogel, Aaron Sorensen. Vogues, as we navigate through the spring and start doing projections into the fall, we were chewing on this yesterday just a little bit, but ceiling. What's the ceiling for the defense? how much of a jump can year two be? I mean, are you expecting 09 Nebraska? What are your expectations here, knowing what you got back?
Yeah, I'd be surprised. I'd be surprised if 09 was the ceiling, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's that far off. I'm forgetting off the top of my head how many points like an Iowa gave up last year. It was between 10 and 13. And you know, that 09 Nebraska team was right around 10. 2023 Huskers were at 18. So I think that 13, 14 point range is well within their grasp. It might be close to the upper limit, the ceiling, so to speak. If you get there though, well, that's Nebraska's offense averaged 18 points a game last year too. That's 5 points of improvement. The offense improves at all. But, you know, all of a sudden you're 2-3 games above 500 most of the time. And I think any Nebraska fan will take that at the moment.
Vogues, on the offensive side, what is the thing that the offense can do, step forward, right, for year two to garner not only some more points, but from an efficiency standpoint, if you could pick an item with the offense, they do X better in 2024, that leads to consistency, that leads to points.
Yeah, I think they need to be a little bit better on early downs, which comes down to staying on schedule. It's not fun to talk about, but it's like this hidden weight that good teams apply, where if you're just consistently ahead of the chains, you know, you're really leaning on teams. And with how Nebraska plays, I think that even takes on a bigger area of impact. Explosive plays are probably the quickest way to see some real improvement, but those are kind of tough. It's tough to just say, go out there, let's hit this guy for 30 yards. Well, sure. Like, if you could do that every time, you just call that play every time. So I tend to focus on kind of like the smallest thing you can potentially control. That's being a little bit better on first and second down. And it sets up everything else. So Nebraska is a success rate team. And this has been the case the past 2 years, really, has ranked pretty low, bottom third nationally on offense. And it's been able to kind of flirt with 500, those two seasons, because it was a pretty good explosive play team. I think if you had the option, you'd flip those two. You'd rather be less explosive, more efficient. And I think that's where Nebraska wants to be.
They really didn't score and haven't scored the last couple of years unless they got that home run play. Even this year, you look at those big option quarterback runs or the option pass deep ball to Lloyd. That's how you got your points. Rarely was it 12 plays, 80 yards.
Yeah, it very rarely was. And, you know, and that comes with, I mean, I know Sims had played a lot of football at Georgia Tech, but first year at Nebraska, and then you had Harburg, and then Purdy after that a little bit. That comes, I think, with some youth and inexperience on offense. Same at wide receiver. Like, it's just, these college teams are very, very good, and the talent level's high, but they're not NFL teams. And it's hard for a college football team to consistently go 10 plays, 70, 80 yards. Without something breaking down somewhere, which is why explosive plays take on such a huge role at this level. And you always take those plays when you can get them. But in terms of like setting out the chessboard, which is what we're doing now in the off season, I don't think that can't be your plan. That has to be the bonus.
Vogues, tell us about Counter Read. How can folks get signed up?
Yeah, just head to counterread.com. It's a twice weekly Substack from myself and Aaron Sorensen. You guys did a little talk on the physicality of Matt Rhule and whether teams were feeling it a week later. Earlier, kind of identified some of Nebraska's who I think are their handful of options for their quote unquote best player. Aaron will have a practice recap on Friday for everyone, some of the observations she had from Thursday's practice. So, spring football firing back up. It's a great time to get involved. We'd love to have anyone as a free or paid subscriber.
All right. Get subscribed, counterread.com. Brandon Vogel at Brandon L. Vogel. Give him a follow on Twitter. Give him a find and follow with Counterread, counterread.com. Vogues, we'll check in Saturday. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Good to hear from Brandon Vogel, Connor Reed, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, Connor Clark. Three-putt Mitch checks in, says Connor he'd like to go back and see Bartman, which is off the top rope. Tuck says he loved him some old Dodgers-Yankees rivalry, Lasorda v. Billy Martin.
Funny story about that whole Bartman thing. My dad was actually at that game.
Was he?
Yeah. He was on a rooftop. He still has the field pass from it.
Okay. Brennan asked an important question. What's the superior hot dog at a ballpark? And Brennan asks for or says Nathan's.
If it ain't red, I don't want it.
Right. I'm a Fairbury guy. But to be quite frank, Hebrew National hot dogs are undefeated. They're incredible. If I got to go somewhere other than Fairbury, let's hear from Matt.
Wait. As a part-time employee of the Salt Dogs, I do feel inclined to say Sheboygan.
Okay.
You just wanted
to show off that, yes, you were in show choir. And
I was not in show choir.
You were.
Damn it. I was the president of my choir, but
you showed up to prom as a wizard one time. Uh-huh. He was in show choir.
No. No, I was in the Renaissance choir. Much different.
Dude.
The ladies loved us a lot less.
Completely. That's why you don't go.
I think Schmidt and I are going to take off.
Yeah, you just sing your show tunes and yeah. Enjoy yourself.
Hey, Sheboygan's got a catchy jingle. It's all
sure,
it is.
Yeah, and they're good. They're good. But they're, yeah, so the Pride of Fairbury, Bill Dolman, tomorrow would people's elbow us if we don't throw out the Fairbury hot dogs. And the Chicago kids, the Danny Burks, the Cotter Clarks are all uppity about their hot dog choices. Matt Rhule, we didn't ask him about hot dogs, but he was asked about the quarterbacks. Cut five here. How are those quarterbacks looking so far so good in spring?
Dylan and Daniel have done a great job of preparing within this offense. I think they know what to do. They know where to go with the football. They're on time. They're savvy. They're smart. So I've been really, really pleased. I mean, you can see what a bright future they both have. You know, Heinrich has done a great job of mastering, you know, kind of, you know, you go through last year, right? You're building for one guy. You kind of move into another. You know, now year two, we know who we are. We know what we have. We know the guys. Bring Glenn back into the fold along with us. So I think we've been really able to kind of, at least in the passing game, identify, hey, here's what we want to do. And you can see Heinrich being very comfortable with those things.
Can we squeeze in the comment from Rhule here when it comes to the quarterback situation, end of the season, cut seven?
We have 30 seconds here, so I
don't
know.
No. It's a hell no. So we'll hear from Matt Rhule what he thinks is realistic, his expectation by the end of spring for the quarterbacks.
You can hear cut seven at the other end of the
yes,
trade.
So just be patient. 489-1240, 800-825-5865. More comments from you. Current or past player you'd want to go see most on opening day?
And?
For MLB.
The tease of the year, cut seven coming your way after the break.
Sure. Expectations. All right. Wind down hour one after this.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time this hour, more reaction from Matt Rhule. Spring football, heard from the coach after practice today. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, Connor Clark. It is opening day. What player, current or past, would you want to see on opening day? Give me a player for MLB. We'll read off your comments, take your phone calls. Coming up in hour two, Mitch Sherman with The Athletic as he'll get us kicked off. Gary Barnett, thoughts on some spring football. And then Danny Burke, Burke's best bets. Here is Coach Rhule. Expectations for the quarterback room at the end of spring ball.
I'm expecting them both to be ready to start. We have three quarterbacks. I need three quarterbacks on scholarship. I need three quarterbacks who can start. High expectations. That doesn't mean they will start. I probably won't even worry about who the actual guy is until I've always kind of gone with who that's illuminated to us. You know, sometimes you start to give Sam the reps as a starting quarterback. You know, Sean starts to really elevate his game now. You know, so but we need to be in a position where we feel like those guys can start at the end of spring and move the team. And that's why we're doing the three fields and all the things that we're doing. We are not dipping our toe in. And we normally have it in year two, right? Like year one, you're trying to, they've never even heard this verbiage, you know, so you're trying to teach things very slowly to everybody. It's year two, The best thing you have in year two, Mitch, is that like other players can teach, hey, this is what that means. And so you have that. But both those guys came here to play. And again, it's a marathon, not a sprint for young players. You know, it's not about where you are today. It's where you are 3-4 years from now that determines your future. But we are accelerating the pace for all of our young players, because just like, you know, we need those guys ready to play, we need some of those young receivers ready to play. And so we're as a coaching staff, taking that personally.
Gotta love it. Take it personally and get a quarterback ready. Get a second quarterback ready. Get a third quarterback ready. And folks were impressed, although limited activity with what was open this morning. But the take is this. It just looks different coming out of Raiola's hands when he throws a football.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks big time.
I think we even knew that from watching his high school film.
Yeah, he's just a dude.
The question with him is not the arm talent. It's how does he pick up the offense? Mm-hmm. Is he able to make quick decisions? Is he able to process the game?
Do you stay confident?
And can he be a leader? That's kind of like my last point. I think one thing to watch here, I've mentioned this a couple months ago, but it's an important reminder time. This quarterback competition is not just about Harburg, Raiola, and Kalen. You also got to think about the walk-ons. You got a couple walk-ons on that room, Jack Waukee being one of them, a guy that has a lot to prove in terms of does Nebraska need to bring in a portal quarterback following the spring. It's a big spring for him. There's other walk-ons. Well, I think Luke Longvall is still on the roster. If any of those guys can show something, that might be all Nebraska needs to say, hey, we don't need to bring in another guy after spring. Obviously, if Raiola impresses and you feel good about the strides Harburg has made, that could alleviate that concern as well. But the more the merrier with the quarterbacks, the more you have ready to start. If one of those walk-ons can impress and show the coaching staff, hey, you know what, I belong here, I belong as a Division I quarterback, it could go a long way in convincing Nebraska that they don't need to go to the portal following spring.
You just got to keep that room intact in a portal era and transfer era. Whoever doesn't win the job's got to be bought into the teammates and the program and stay, and I'm not trying to cause panic. I'm not even insinuating that would happen, but it happens a lot of places. Look at Ohio State. There's 4 million quarterbacks in that room, and most of them are 4- or 5-star. And do you sit, wait, and get better? Brennan talking about the Wade Boggs Challenge on opening day, 32 beers on a cross-country flight. He said, in honor of opening day and the Wade Boggs Challenge, we should do the Wade Boggs Challenge for the show.
32 beers in 2 hours is intense.
Yeah, good luck. Wake me up when that...
Need a beer bong for that.
...gets completed.
It's that time.
Hey, Mitch.
Mitchie. We're looking for you, pal.
Mitch Sherman from The Athletic, talking Big Red.
Unleash the fury, Mitch.
Unleash the fury!
On Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Tower 2. It's Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, Cotter Clark. Dive into some spring football thoughts. Mitch Sherman with us from The Athletic, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, it's opening day. You love baseball.
He also loves the Royals. That's why he's unleashing the fury.
He is. They're still in first, maybe. The Mariners have the new double Mitch Witch that features two different halves inspired by two Mitches on the team, Garver and Haniger. Mitch, what do you think of these two choices here? Chicken breast, marinated tomatoes, bacon, Havarti cheese, and a fried avocado wedge. The Garver is pulled pork, sliced Black Forest ham, Swiss cheese, Dijon and mayonnaise, and sliced pickles. What would you add?
They're both outstanding, I will say. I just listening to your description, I read them when you alerted me to this remarkable sandwich earlier today, and they didn't quite sound, they were enticing, but hearing you read, and it might just be that I'm hungry right now, Schmidt, but hearing you read them in your silky smooth tones, that really made me want to just get on the next flight to Seattle. I wonder if they can ship one of those too. It wouldn't. Maybe I could make one. A trip to the store. It would take some ingenuity. But if it was going to be a triple Mitch sandwich, or the triple Mitch witch, is that what it is?
Yes. What are you adding here? What's the third option or the third addition?
Well, Well, so I've given this some thought, and yesterday I was out of town, and I went to a place called Capriati Sandwich Shop. Okay. And this is a recency bias situation here because I had this sandwich just yesterday. But I feel like because the Mitch Witch, the double Mitch Witch, was unveiled today, or I caught wind of it today, I was meant to eat this sandwich yesterday, and it's called the Bobby. So we can even go with some baseball there. My team's new franchise player, Bobby Witt, although it's spelled differently, the Bobby. Mm-hmm. So the Bobby from Capriati's, which I ate yesterday, is a slow-roasted homemade turkey, hand-shredded, topped with provolone cheese, lettuce, tomato, onion, and mayo. Mm. It was very good. So, also, this is a different version of the Bobby. It has cranberry sauce and handmade stuffing on it. That's what I had yesterday. Oh. That's the version I had. A very Thanksgiving-esque sandwich. But some version of that would be added to the double witch to make it a triple Mitch witch.
See, one of the things we were talking about before the show, Mitch, was adding both a fried egg and bacon to this sandwich to give it another layer. And as I've been thinking here, we didn't talk about this on the air, but it's been ruminating on me. The problem with those two additions, as good as they are, is there a cheat code to any sandwich? If you had a fried egg and bacon to any sandwich, it goes with about anything.
It goes up four notches.
And it goes up four notches. Like, I don't like bacon on a burger because it's a cheat code. Like, everyone loves bacon. Of course it's going to be good on a burger. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the same problem I'm running into here.
In fact, I did add bacon. I'm remembering. I'm not working on a lot of sleep today. I got back into the house at about 1 a.m. and then was at Memorial Stadium at 8:30. But I did. I added bacon to that sandwich yesterday. So I was cheating, and the sandwich was good. But I think it would have been good, Elijah, without the bacon. Mm. So some of those ingredients, some version of those ingredients would comprise the third portion of a triple Mitch Witch.
The third tier, I love it.
And I just realized, Mitch, your late night arrival last night explains why I woke up to late night tweets from Mitch Sherman and my notifications on Twitter. It checks out now. I woke up and I'm like, why was Mitch up so late? I get it.
Yeah, I was coming from the West Coast, and I tweeted that thanks to Southwest Airlines. In-flight.
Mitch Sherman's with us from The Athletic. Mitch, before we get to football, past or current player you would most like to see on opening day? Eric, NASCAR Eric, says, I'd love to have seen Griffey and Randy Johnson with the Mariners. DJ says Bo Jackson. Who do you say?
Well, I would like to have seen, I can get real historic here and say I would have liked to have seen Jackie Robinson on his opening day.
Sure.
I mean, from my own personal feelings and just my preferences in life, I would like to have seen George Brett play on opening day, although I don't believe that he had a first opening day in, I believe, 1974. I'm a Royal through and through, and I saw Alex Gordon on his opening day. I was there in a working capacity and watched that game from the press box. So I'd probably go Brett. Really just my all-time favorite baseball player.
That works. Let's I think the Ted Williams call is good. I would love to have seen Willie Mays. Just Grandpa Schmidt loved Willie Mays. Those are a couple that are there, and I mean the A's 90s teams I loved. Big Red Machine would have been cool. Clemente would have rocked. Oh, so yeah. There are some options there. Let's go to some spring football. And Mitch, you asked Coach Rhule about where the quarterbacks need to be at the end of the spring. We played that comment coming into the first hour. What's your response? What'd you think of Rhule saying, hey, bro, I need three starters at the end of the spring session?
Sometimes you have to ask the question even if you think the coach might shy away from it and give you the politically correct answer because he'll come back with that answer. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect that he would say that he needed to have three starters ready to go at the end of the spring. I think that tells you what his mindset is and the urgency that he has and that Nebraska has about the quarterback spot. It's not often that you come into a spring and far and away your biggest question is quarterback. And if it is, that doesn't generally bode well for what's ahead. But I think that speaks to two things. One, Nebraska is in good shape at most other position groups. I mean, you can't just say, you don't want to completely put on rose-colored glasses and say, hey, they're in great shape everywhere across the field. They just got to figure out the quarterback thing and, you know, hello, college football playoff. That's not the situation. But you can go position by position and make a case that there's a very bright spin to put on just about every group if things work out. If the newcomers, and you're always, people are always high on the newcomers in spring, and Matt Rhule has done a nice job to douse some of those guys with water. He did it with Stephon Thompson today. He did it with Micah Mazzucca back in February. We can talk about that. But the quarterback is the one spot where, yeah, there's a bright side. There's a positive spin in saying Dylan Raiola is a five-star quarterback. He's the most heralded recruit ever to sign with Nebraska. But the fact is he's an 18-year-old true freshman who should be getting ready for his senior prom right now. And instead, he's out there running through drills today on the third practice of March. So they have a lot to accomplish. And I think his answer, it just emphasized the urgency that Nebraska has at that quarterback spot. It's so important for the development of this team. They need a quarterback, as we saw a year ago, and he hopes that Danny Kalen, that Dylan Raiola, and Heinrich Harburg all are equipped and ready to be starting quarterbacks by the end of April. If that doesn't happen, then, you know, he's left the door open previously that Nebraska can go back and look around the transfer portal and see what's there to add some depth or whatever it is they might need.
When you talk about potentially needing more depth, how important do you think the walk-ons are with Jack Walkie and Luke Longvall in terms of their how they figure into this quarterback competition?
Well, Jack Woch doesn't have the experience. I don't know that there's a route for him to do more than be someone who allows them to run plays in practice. They're not going to get down to that place. I say, you know, famous last words, and he'll be starting a game in October. But Luke Longvall, there's a possibility there that something could happen where he emerges and has a nice spring, and he's got the physical tools above what Jack Woch has to be someone that they could factor into the depth situation. And then they're adding Bodhi Sukup, walk-on quarterback out of, I believe it's Blair, in the summer. But he's going to have such little time, just August, to get ready. And it's not so much the 15 practices that the freshmen who enroll early have. It's that they've been in school for an entire semester, and they've been with the team through all the stuff they do in the offseason. That's just as valuable as the 15 practices. So to be a quarterback and come in and play, you almost have to be here in this day and age in the spring. So Longvall, I think, is a possibility to factor in the QB depth picture. The others, and there's only one other in camp right now, I don't think it's more than just having a body there and someone who can help the players around him.
I would like to quickly apologize to the Woshies for butchering the pronunciation of their last name.
I might have messed it up too.
It wasn't me.
you corrected it, so I think you're being a good journalist.
We've hit all the possible pronunciations, so we've got it right with one of them.
Yeah. It's fine. Mitch, I want to go to defense and to Nash in particular because obviously. Yeah. He wrestled this winter, had to drop a ton of weight. They want to back up to 330 for the football season. How do you anticipate that affecting his play in the spring? Because obviously he's a freak athlete, but putting on, 50 pounds between seasons in just a couple of months is grueling on anybody.
I don't think they want him at 330. I think they want him around 310. Okay. I'm sorry that I'm just continuing to correct all of you.
That's why you're here.
We're going to add that to the open.
that's why we talk to people smarter than us.
Yeah. I know there was a tweet floating around out there this afternoon because I saw it and my eyes perked up too. That was not accurate. They want to have Nash, and that was part of the discussion about him wrestling and why it can be beneficial for his football career. Is that he had to cut weight, of course, to get down to 285. Matt Rhule said he thought Nash wrestled usually at about 295. and they want him at 310 for the season. And when I talked to Nash after his first wrestling competition, the Wyoming duel a couple of months ago, he talked about 305, 310, somewhere in that range, and how he feels like it can make him more mobile. He can be quicker off the ball, off the line, at the line of scrimmage, quicker getting to the ball from the defensive side. And he doesn't feel like he's going to lose any strength because he really had to remake his body in order to get down to 285 period to be able to wrestle this winter. So the 330 pounds that he played at last year, I think, is Nash 1.0, or maybe that's Nash 2.0, and this is Nash 3.0. Should be a different kind of player. And you see the determination that he has. He was not supposed to practice today. Matt Rhule didn't want him practicing, and they basically had to pull him off the field during the teamwork drills and tell him, no, you just got done wrestling last week. Give it a little bit of a rest. You've been in the program for a long time. They don't need him out there pushing limits in March.
Mitch Sherman's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Mitch Sherman with The Athletic. Mitch, here about 2 minutes, bud. What do you make of the three teams that are out there smacking each other around? What do you read into that?
Also, along with that, to follow up, the best among the three former Husker mascots, we need your take on that at the end of this answer.
Yeah, the Rattlesnakes, I'll just give it to you now. I think that's the best. You know, Bug Eaters is kind of used up. We've heard that. There's T-shirts. There's companies. The Rattlesnakes is a good one in my view. What's the third? Tell me the third.
Gold Knights.
Okay. No, I'm sticking with the Rattlesnakes. That's my favorite. I think it's just a competition thing. That's been a theme of the entire offseason so far. And it always will be with Matt Rhule. It was a year ago, but they've upped the intensity this year in the competitions, and you know, they had commitment week, which is a lot of competitions last week. They did it in mat drills, competing against each other. They take every opportunity that they can get from January through, well, all year. But this January through April period is really big on competitions in Matt Rhule's program. And this is another way for them to be able to compete. And he really believes that it's a key to being able to compete in the fall, is learning the way to win. And this is a big part of his answer to that equation.
Last question again, 30 seconds. Hot dog at a ballpark. What brand?
Hot dog. Nathan's Hot Dogs.
You're going Nathan? Okay.
Yeah, that's easy enough. Not 30 seconds worth, but that's my favorite, and I'll have it at a ballpark or on the grill in the backyard.
Okay. With an uppity hot dog fan and Connor Clark in here. He's
being
from
a
Chicago
guy.
I love how you just get labeled with that.
It's just a Chicago thing. It's okay.
First off, does ketchup belong on a hot dog? And as a follow-up, Connor's from Chicago, does a tomato belong on a hot dog?
I can deal with a tomato. I can't deal with ketchup on a hot dog, though.
Good answer.
Tomato's
Mitch.
Fine. I mean, it's a luxury item on a hot dog. I'm cool with just some good mustard and relish. Mustard, if mustard's the only thing I have on a hot dog, I'm fine with that. Mm.
Mitch Sherman with The Athletic. Catch his work. Great coverage of Nebraska spring football at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, good to get caught up. Good to have you back from Zona, bud. Thanks for a few minutes today.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
There he is, Mitch Sherman, joining us here on Hale Varsity. And our friend Todd checks in via email, chris@halevarsity.com. Love Todd's honesty about the 30 minutes I spend telling listeners where to find us. But Todd says, give him Ozzie Smith or Dale Murphy, player he'd want to see most on opening day. Gary Barnett next.
And now, back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hale Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, Connor Clark. As we are going to get Coach Barnett on here in a second. He just texted back. So he's geared up for the opening day. He's a St. Louis dude, so he may have a Cardinal or two. So Steve checks in on the stream. He'd like to see Dave Kingman back in the Cubs era. That's not awful.
I don't even know who that is.
Dave Kingman. He was a big bopper. He was a home run guy. And he might have been with Baltimore, too. That might have been before my time with him. Steve's also a big Red Machine. He got to see Johnny Bench in the late 70s. George Brett, Bo Jackson are again making the list. I would have loved to have seen Randy Johnson.
Oh, the big unit.
The unit would have been good. I would have loved to have seen Randy Johnson destroy a pigeon. That would have been great. Sorry. Sauerkraut is a vote from NU Grandpa on said hot dog. That's not awful. So we'll get into some college football. Daddy Burke is with us here also at 540, 489-1240 to get in, 489-1240. Loved what Mitch Sherman said there just a moment ago with Nebraska and the three teams. That's something that we kind of hit on a little bit ago with Nebraska learning how to win. What's the method to the madness? How are you going to get the most out of your guys? And it seems like they love teeing off on one another versus doing the old drill thing.
Well, Matt Rhule,
the fundamental stuff.
Matt Rhule made it very clear today. He's a guy that will turn anything into a competition. If it's a competition, he's going to give his best effort in order to win. That's the kind of qualities he is looking for in his team. And he's done that through winter conditioning. They always have the teams broken up for winter conditioning. You saw it during team commitment week just last week, and now you see it again in spring football. You're going to divvy the teams up and turn it into a competition. Hey, it's practice. It's not always fun, but how we're going to make it fun is we're going to add some juice to it, make it a competition, make it a winners and losers type thing. And hey, if you have a team that is always solely focused on the win in spring football, you know what those guys are going to bring you in the fall whenever it's on the field, when you're between the white lines, whenever it's a Saturday afternoon and it's a one-score game in the fourth quarter. You know which guys are going to bring it. You know which guys are going to give it all in order to win.
Let's hear a little bit from Matt Rhule, specifically on those three teams, as Coach was asked about it. And we've heard about the quarterbacks here, but the competitiveness, right, the urgency here, cut eight. As Coach Rhule from post-practice today.
You know, we do a lot of competitive things. So we just, I think we're going to put a video out about it at some point. We're just trying some new things to make it competitive and fun. So we put together three teams, like literally teams. Like we have an offense and defense called the Bug Eaters. We have an offense and a defense called the Old Gold Knights. We have an offense and a defense called what? The Rattlesnake Boys. They each have their own song. The injured guys are like the GMs. They have coaches. And like today was a third down derby. They're competing against each other. What we found with our guys is I was making fun of them out there. Like, oh, if I told you you had 36 reps of third down, guys would be like, my legs. I say, hey, guys, we're going to compete. And they're like, run it back. Do it again. Like, these guys love competition. They grew up in an era of, you know, playing Madden and playing Mario Kart. And like, they just love to compete. So I think what it does for us is it makes different players have to go against different people. It's not all we're doing, but it's one part of what we're doing. It's giving all three quarterbacks a chance to really captain their own team and move your team. And we have a lot of unique things to it, all different types of situational things. But just trying to really buy into what our kids do, our young men do well. They love to compete, so we're trying to make it into a spring league. We made our own logo, our own deal. So we're trying to be ahead of the curve. You saw the NFL adopted the kickoff. Remember we did that last year in the spring game? So, like, we're always innovators over here. Now that'll go viral, and people will be hating me on Twitter. But we're just trying to do something to make it fun. You know, I think I hate playing golf, but the minute you say, hey, let's play a game, I become a different person. Never for money, of course, but like, hey, let's play skins or something. I'm all of a sudden, I'm a different person. And that's the way our players are. They love to compete. And so we did it and almost got a little too competitive at times. So it's been really fun. It was fun for the first day. We'll see how it continues if we have enough bodies to continue it.
And Connor, did you notice there? He talked about the kickoff. Did I not mention that with Vogel? I swear there is some foresight with Matt Rhule and some of his recruiting strategy, understanding what is coming in college football, knowing that you did it in the spring game last year. Oh, you're going to bring it up unsolicited now this week, on the same week where the NFL changes that rule. I think there is a little bit of 4D chess there with Matt Rhule and how he's constructed his roster, understanding there's probably going to be some changes to special teams coming. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm reading too far into things.
I would like to know where his crystal ball is located. I mean, you could be right. That is an impressive thing to foresee. I mean, There's been so much talk about it with the NFL, and you heard Brandon say it earlier. Who knows with college football at this point? But, like, I could see college football adopting it because, okay, if you're caring about the safety of the professional athletes that much, you're probably going to want to care about the, I guess, amateur. I know they're getting paid, but the kids who are playing the game, their safety as well, because that's the future of the NFL right there. So, I mean, we could see it happen, and maybe you're right. Maybe Matt Rhule is just ahead of the eight ball and just kind of saw this coming, which would be really impressive. And I guess you could add that to a list of impressive things that he's done. So
I also have a bit of an agenda by bringing this up because I want to be right. I want to be the smartest guy in the room. You know,
flip this moment right now.
But like, yeah, like it's a case of me just trying to read in between the lines with Matt Rhule. I mean, we've talked about what 5 years from now in college football looks like a lot, and we've talked about the importance of the AD being able to forecast and predict and understand how college football is changing in what seems to be an almost unpredictable time. But there's some importance to the head football coach understanding what 5 years from now looks like, understanding that, you know what, we're going to have guys for 5 years with a redshirt season. What does college football look like 5 years from now? How do we construct a roster now, and how do we train our guys now, not only to prepare them for the 2024 season, but also to prepare them for the 2027 season, whenever the rules of college football could be different?
A little bit more from Matt Rhule as his post-practice presser ongoing. We've heard about the quarterbacks. We've talked a little bit about competition, which is nice. Well, he touched on a couple of guys. So you have Mazzuca. That is somebody to get an eye on. It was a little chilly towards Micah Mazzuca after January. How are things now? Cut 10.
Micah loves being on the football field. Okay, so you get Micah on the football field, and like, you know, he loves to be out there. I think Micah and I, you know, I think the thing that I hopefully I've done a good job of articulating to him is that we have, like, when these guys come here for 1 year, because we have, you know, a lot of guys on our staff with NFL ties, we're able to get the reports that people wrote on them. And so we don't go to all the good things. We go to the things that they're saying. Hey, what's the question mark? You know, is it route running? Is it speed? Is it attention to detail? Is it body composite? What is it? And then let's devise a plan to help you fix those things going into this year. The NFL is the greatest job as a player. You know, you get paid based upon what you did in college, right? Like, if you walked into a McDonald's, like, I've probably said this before, but like, one cash register makes minimum wage, the other one doesn't make $500 an hour. But in the NFL, well, this guard makes league minimum, this one's making $24 million. And so, trying to get guys to understand, hey, let's find out what the issues are. Let's fix them now so when all the scouts come in, they have their questions, we can check boxes. So
that's Coach Matt Rhule. We've found him. It's Gary Barnett with us to talk some college football. Coach, thanks for the phone call. We've been efforting. We're going to take a hammer to our phone bank. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Chris. I don't know what happened, but anyway, it's good to talk to you, dude.
Good to you, man. Good to spend some time with you. We'll get to football in 2 seconds. I got to get your baseball take. Player you'd love to see on opening day, past or current?
Well, past would be Ted Williams.
Okay.
And you got to understand, I'm an old guy, so I got to see a lot of guys play. And then Ohtani, I think, is the guy I'd want us to go see today.
Sure.
You know,
that's a good bet. I mean,
he's just such a special player, man.
You're hilarious.
Come on, that was good.
He is a little too soon there. I want to get your thoughts, Coach. We've got about 3 minutes with a hard time and might keep you 2 minutes on the other side if it's good with you. And if you're short on time, say so as well. But Coach Rhule's got three teams right now rotating against one another, and it just feels soon, not that I know anything, but it's different than just kind of hammering fundamentals. Talk to us a little bit about helping guys learn how to win in that frame of playing games or doing situational football with your team. You got to know your team, I would guess, but the ability to have kind of a three-team rotation in the spirit of competition, to, you know, offense versus defenses, and really amping up the urgency.
Well, I think that two things come to mind. First of all, he's seriously considering an up-tempo, both, you know, playing against it with his defense, but also running it on offense. The other thing is that you don't do a lot of coaching on the field when that happens. You're just worried about reps, and so all your coaching takes place in the film room or in the classroom with the players as they evaluate and watch all the film. And so you don't have time to stop a play and walk it through. And so guys don't get to hear what the other guy got criticized for or what he did right that they need to know. Everything's done in the classroom, and then you hope they absorb it in there. But you're just trying to get a lot of reps, trying to get it all on video so that you can coach off of it in the meetings that you have in the spring.
Gary Barnett's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Coach, when we talk about the quarterbacks, Coach Rhule was very blunt today. He was asked about where the quarterbacks need to be at the end of spring. We've got about 60 seconds till a hard break. He says, I need three starters. Is that doable, knowing Nebraska's quarterback situation with two freshmen and Harburg?
Well, if you got three starters, you got none. And so he's really hoping somebody really emerges from all this. I can tell you that. But, you know, at this point in time, and what you want your kids to hear is I'm looking for three starters, and I'm going to give everybody a chance. And that sells to the kids that he is open to anything that happens and whoever's going to make it work.
So it's a bit of a coachism?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely.
Coach, can you hang tight or do you got to run? Let us know.
No, I can hang tight.
Okay, hang tight. We'll hit a hard break here. Couple more minutes on the other side with Hall of Fame coach Gary Barnett. He's with us here. We're powered by Cornhead Lager. Find the show, follow it, subscribe, can watch it live on the Hale Varsity YouTube channel. Give it a follow on Twitter as well at HVarsity Radio and the different platforms. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, Connor Clark, as we continue on with Coach Barnett. Next, it's Hale Varsity. We'll check in with Danny Burke also on the other side.
And now, back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Couple more minutes with Hall of Fame coach Gary Barnett, Hale Varsity Radio on a Thursday. Coach, thanks for hanging out. And wanted to get your thoughts and reaction to Troy Dannon. That happened last week as he was named, had his presser just a couple of days ago. But what's the word on Dannon so far? Impressive, just at least in the initial meetings with him from our view.
Well, I don't know much about him, but, you know, he was very successful there. And he's really well-respected in the business. I don't personally know him, but I know that, you know, you can't run a big organization like he's run and a major athletic department like he's done that's done so well without having something going for you. Mm-hmm. And so, I think on paper he's a great choice. We'll have to see how it works out, but he's sure well-respected in the business.
Gary, he compared his role to that of a fullback from Nebraska in the 90s, going out and clearing the way for guys like Matt Rhule and other members of the Husker football coaching staff. Is that a fair comparison for an athletic director?
Well, I think it was very smart of him to do that. That was about as clever as you can do. But, yeah, I mean, that's what they still got to raise money. They still have, you know, that's a big part of it. But in the end, that is really what it – hopefully that's what your athletic director is about. If he's about himself and about making himself look good, then that's a different deal. And so if that's truly how he feels, that's the best way, and I think the way it should be for an athletic director to look at his job.
Gary Barnett with us here on Hale Varsity. Coach, we'll get you out on this, and thanks for your time today. When it comes to the South Stadium project, we're unsure where that will go. That was a big deal for Trev. It was going to be $450 million, tear it down, build it back up, fan comfort. That said, things have shifted, and the new AD, Dannon, all about the Nebraska collective. What's the route right now you would go? Would you invest in stadium upgrades, or would you pour into NIL if you had the choice?
Well, your stadium upgrades, if you do your job and you win games, stadium upgrade will be a lot easier to do. And I think at this point in time, even though the whole collective thing is not anything that I really, am into, but it's the way it is. And so you've got to get players, you've got to win, and then the other things come. And the stadium project will be a piece of cake if they can go in there and have two or three great years, probably 2 years really in a row, maybe 1 year would do it. But that's what it's about, right? He's got to get players, and he's got to be able to compete, and they know that. And where everything's going with the whole employee status of players and the two conferences, the Big Ten and the SEC, cavorting around the way they are and taking over sort of the power, making a power move here, you got to make sure that if things come to pass that there's two big conferences, that you get to be in it. And that means winning games and being viable and being of value. So winning games is most important right now.
Coach, have a great weekend. Thanks for the time today.
All right, Chris. Great being with you.
Appreciate you. There he is, Gary Barnett, Hall of Fame coach with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. We check in with the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke, Burke's Best Bets, burksbeat.com, and the podcast.
He's
Danny
flying the W.
He is flying that W. It's opening day. We've been baseball heavy with some nostalgia, which is what you need, what's awesome about baseball. And your player you'd love to see on opening day, Danny. We've asked our guests today that question, past or current. Danny Burke would watch who?
Ooh, so you cut out a little bit. Were you saying any player or a specific pitcher for opening day?
Any player, current or past?
Man, that's a great question. I think seeing someone like a Barry Bonds in his prime, regardless of the whole steroid debacle, would be great, just because you can't really argue with the statistics of how purely dominant he was. That would be electric to see. Certainly in my lifetime he was playing, but never got to see him in person. Trying to go down the list, I think Ernie Banks as a Cubs fan would be someone I'd want to see. I think that would be tremendous. And then I never got to see Derek Jeter play either. Growing up, he was someone that I idolized, being an infielder and someone who was always hustling on every single play and a very gritty guy. So those would probably be off the top of my head. I'd probably have to dig in a little bit deeper. But, yeah, because of the Cubs background, Ernie Banks would be tremendous. And then Barry Bonds from arguably being the greatest player in baseball history. And then Derek Jeter just from my era, just growing up and liking him. So, yeah, I think that's who I'd narrow it down
okay.
to. What did you guys say?
I Ted Williams is one that Elijah nailed. I said Willie Mays for me.
I said Bob Gibson as
Bob
well.
Bob Gibson's a great take. Would you rather go to the sports book with Pete Rose or
Shohei?
Wow. I wasn't going to go Shohei there.
No, Shohei will take you to a shady neighborhood in Los Angeles where he'll go.
This elevator has, we're going to a room with no windows.
In the heart of Compton.
Yes. Daddy, let's get some futures here. Who do you like for MLB, bud, before we get to the Sweet 16?
Yeah, so in terms of futures, I have a plethora of plays that I made, but I'll just kind of start from the top. Atlanta, I got to win the World Series plus 650. Yes, it's a chalkier play, but I think they should be more priced, about plus 450 in books. A couple of them, I guess, had 6-1 and then plus 650. So if you could get 6-1 or better, I think that's certainly worth a flyer on the Braves, who, let's be honest, are going to win the division, going to make the playoffs, and once they do, they're not going to be 6-1 or better once they get to the postseason. They added a lot of pitching. Aaron Bummer from the White Sox, Ronaldo Lopez, Chris Sale, who you're buying low on. If he can get back to form, that's going to be a tremendous hit for this rotation that's already deep, and the offense is prolific. So the Braves, to me, are a team that I like a lot. I took a flyer on the Diamondbacks at 40-1. Looking back on everything, I don't think it's going to end up just being a fluke with this D-backs team. They retained the guys they needed to, have great pitching off the top, and the division outside of the Dodgers, in my mind, is going to be open enough for them to sneak into the wild card. Also took them over 83.5 wins. Let's see, I'm fading the Cardinals under 85.5 wins. Don't think they did anything that's going to improve their team. Just added veteran pieces to the pitching staff from guys who are over the hill. Occasionally they'll give you good starts, but nothing that's going to carry all year. And a very young roster with their offense that still has yet to prove themselves outside of Goldschmidt and Arenado. Let's see. The Mariners, I'm very high on this year. I have them to win the division plus 315, 21-1 on them to win the World Series. Pitching rotation is awesome. Arguably going to be one of the best in baseball. Have a young lineup. Added some other guys who were coming off their best years. That should help bolster that lineup. And then I'm fading the World Series champion Texas Rangers under 89.5 wins. Scherzer's going to miss the first half of the season. The rest of the pitching staff, I think, played way over their head in the postseason. Don't get me wrong, credit where credit is due, and the offense is awesome, but there's going to be that hangover. You're missing your top ace, and I just think 89.5 is a little bit high, assuming the Astros will still be competitive and the Mariners are going to win that division. So, yeah, I'm going against the grain and going against the reigning World Series champion Texas Rangers.
Daddy, hang tight if you can. We'll get some Sweet 16 picks. Is that good on the other side?
Sounds like a plan, fellas.
There he is, Daddy Burke, burksbeat.com. That's the podcast you check out as well. Coach Jeff Smith says give him Roberto Clemente. We'll wind down a Thursday next.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you one final time. Hail Varsity on a Thursday. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, Connor Clark, Daddy Burke with us here from burksbeat.com at Daddy Burke 5 on Twitter. Steven has been to Compton several times in reference to the Shohei comment there, Elijah. Been to Watts as well, been to neither, been to Westwood. When I was in L.A.
My dad, I want to embarrass him. He has a great story about having a bathroom emergency on the way home from LAX in Compton. Because in Compton, no convenience stores will let you into the bathroom.
Unless you bought something or you just wouldn't
let you in. Yeah. He has a great story about an emergency and where he had to go. But.
Steve says Reggie Jackson Jr. got to meet Reggie Jackson. Reggie's still an a-hole. So there you go. Sweet 16, Danny.
Yeah.
Sweet 16 today. Who do you like tonight? Who do you like tomorrow? Here we got any specials for the field right now?
Yeah, let's start with tonight. Really, this game with UConn and San Diego State was one that I was waiting to pull the trigger on for a few days, and I had a guest on my show on the podcast that I did, Bruce Marshall, one of the most respected handicappers that I know, and he's been doing it for years on years and years in Las Vegas. And I was waiting for a little bit of validation for him because I didn't want to just think I was chasing the chalk, but he kind of gave me a little bit more confidence in the side with UConn. And I laid 10 in the hook with the Huskies against the Aztecs. You have what is a better UConn team than last year's squad that dominated the Aztecs in the championship game. And San Diego State, yes, they're returning a few guys, but they're not using as much production from their bench as they were last year. They don't technically have as much experience as they did with last year's team. And they're not as good of a defensive group. Don't get me wrong. Look, they're still a top defensive unit, but that's what really carried them all the way through. I think they're going to be vulnerable defending the perimeter tonight against this team in UConn, who's shooting, over 36%. From deep, and they're second in adjusted offensive efficiency, according to KenPom. Hurley's kind of that psycho in the sense that he's just going to pummel the entire game and keep the foot on the pedal regardless of the situation. So seldom do I like to lay the big chalk and the big spread, but I'm putting the confidence here in Hurley that he's going to keep his guys going all the way to the end and not letting any extra added incentive from the Aztecs get into his players. So that's what I got for that game tonight, laying the wood with UConn. And then the other play that I got, I'm taking Illinois. I took plus two, or rather gave out plus two, because, you know, you can't bet on Illinois schools here in the state of Illinois. Absolutely absurd, but that's the way it goes. You have a difference maker in Terrence Shannon Jr. is what it comes down to. Illinois' offense is amazing. And this defense from Iowa State, while it's very good, if Illinois is able to hit their threes, because the Cyclones are allowing their opponents to shoot a very high three-point rate, Iowa State's not good enough offensively to keep up. I'd go a little bit deeper into the analysis. I know we're running up against it, fellas, but those are the two plays that I got coming up soon.
Quickly, what's your read? Bama, North Carolina tonight.
Jeez, I'm staying the hell away from that one. But what I am doing is doing the traditional in-game route. My inkling would be with North Carolina, but what scares me is if the Crimson Tide are hitting their triples early and North Carolina gets off to another slow start. But I would lean toward North Carolina. That's a team I'm looking to in-game.
Danny, the podcast, the website, tell the folks how.
Yeah, Burke's Beat, if you search it, Spotify, Apple, website, burkesbeat.com. That's where you can get all the content. And we know opening day was today, not the best in the betting sense, but hopefully we can bounce back there. Plenty more content revolving around that coming soon.
At Danny Burke 5, follow the Pride of Chicago on Twitter. Danny, we'll do it again. Thanks for the time today.
You bet, guys. Have a good one.